Hello and welcome back to Dream Girl. If you're new here, I'm Sheen, your host, and today we're joined by the incredible Simon Alexander Ong. Simon is an award-winning life coach, but he's also the author of the best-selling book Energize, and he's very well known for helping people unlock their potential and energize their lives, and he's a dear friend of mine. So please join me in welcoming Simon back to Dubai and for the first time on the show. Hi, Simon.
Sheen, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. It's actually, I'm really glad we got to do this time around. How are you finding Dubai?
I love it. I'm finding myself here a lot more, actually. In the past year alone, I've been here probably three, four times.
Wow.
I just find myself coming back again and again.
Well, we can't wait to see you move here. But, you know, today, what I really want to talk to you about is mostly, 2025 is starting and we want people to put their best foot forward. And I think that's where you shine anyway. But before we deep dive into the juice, I would love to let you introduce yourself a little bit to the audience.
Sure. So I was born in the UK to two Malaysian Chinese parents. And for most of my life, I grew up with this mistaken belief that success was defined by a job title. I remember when I was a teenager and I came back home from speaking to the careers advisor, and I said to my dad, I don't know what career path to go down because that will influence the degree I choose at university. And my dad said to me, well, don't think too far ahead. If you focus on what would help you become a banker, a lawyer, a doctor, or an accountant, you'll be successful. So my definition of success was limited to these job titles. And it was understandable because we didn't have social media at the time. The internet wasn't born yet. And so you were influenced heavily by your community and your family, by the jobs they did and what they saw to be successful. So I went to university. That was an experience in itself because I failed my second year. Imagine telling that to a Chinese father that you had failed your second year, let alone any parent. So that became a four-year degree. I finished that, went to the world of finance. I got seduced by films such as Wall Street and Boiler Room. And so I thought that was the path to making money and experiencing happiness. So I started in finance in the worst possible time. It was the middle of 2007. And I said, I'm going to work myself up the career ladder. And maybe in a few years' time, I'll reflect on what I want to do. Maybe I'll change company. Maybe I'll pivot my career. But a year later, the financial crisis swept across the planet. And the company I was a graduate with was Lehman Brothers. So as you can imagine, it was very surreal in September 2008, where your company was all over the news about whether it would survive, would the government bail them out, but it collapsed. And I was in the position where I had to look for another job far earlier than I ever imagined. And while I still spent nearly 10 years in the financial services industry, the experience kickstarted what I feel is the longest journey we make, which are the inches from our heads to our hearts. Never an easy journey, but the most important and fulfilling that we will ever embark on. So I started reflecting on whether this was what I wanted to do long term, and I quickly realized it wasn't. And so even though I was in this sector for the next 10 years, I would spend my time outside of work and on weekends exploring things that I wanted to do. And that is where I landed in the world of coaching. And so I slowly worked myself out of the corporate industry and into the path of working for myself. And that was the end of 2016, beginning of 2017. And since then, it has been an absolute roller coaster. I started coaching people one-on-one. That evolved into speaking on stages at companies and conferences, to being interviewed on the likes of BBC and Sky News, to getting a book deal with Penguin, just as the world was entering the COVID pandemic years. And now having the opportunity to spread my message in cities across the world.
Wow. So you see, Simon, yesterday when I was trying to prepare for this conversation, I was like, I'm making my life harder because I know that when I speak to you, other things are going to come up. And I was absolutely right. There was no need to prepare because right now you've given me like 1,000 questions to ask. I'm going to start from the beginning of your story. So I love what you said that, you know, there's that famous saying, I can't remember now who said it, but if you know when you're young that you want to become a doctor, a teacher or a lawyer, that's exactly your punishment is that you will exactly become that. But if you don't know what you want to become, then the world is your oyster, right? Yeah. So then you never know, just like us, neither of us thought that this would be what we would be doing.
Absolutely. I would never imagine I would be sitting here doing interviews.
Right.
And, you know, recording and pushing out content about what could help people and bring value to their lives.
Right. And as you said, the internet itself did not even exist at the time. So life is changing and moving really quickly. And my main question I wanted to ask you, you've already answered, which is, you know, based on your years of experience and every people you've worked with, what was a pivotal moment for you that changed your definition of success? But you've already answered that question for me. And I think if we were to deep dive a little bit into that, because this is something that a lot of my audience and a lot of people I know personally struggle with, because there is that perception of there is a sunk cost, right? Mm. We've put in so much time in getting that specific degree, that specific job. You've worked so many years in there already, you're grinding, but this is not something that you feel fulfilled doing. Now they feel stuck in this. And I think we are lucky that we managed to like change that mindset of if this doesn't serve us. And as you said, and beautifully said, that, you know, the journey from your mind to your heart is the biggest journey that you'll take in life and the most like rewarding one. But how do you advise people to kind of like get themselves out of these golden shackles?
Sure. So I think just hearing what you asking, there's two parts to this. There's the sunk cost and then there is this feeling of being lost.
Yes.
So the sunk cost is an experience that puts off a lot of people. If I start this, what if this doesn't work out? You know, I could put 5 years of my life into this, but what if I'm nowhere further than where I am right now? And the issue here is that you're working from your past self. So what's happening is you look at your past, how you were brought up, what your beliefs are, what your thoughts are, and you say to yourself, I'm not that sort of person. I don't have the resources. I don't have the access that all these other people do. I can't get there. I'm going to put a lot of time in it. I'm not sure if I'm going to get anywhere. You're working from your past and that can hold you back. The way you want to do it is to work from your future. And it's a very different mechanic here because when you work from your past, you have to push yourself forward. This is what we call motivation. And motivation doesn't last long. I mean, we are beginning a new year and a lot of people will be making resolutions. But the fact is, the people that are making resolutions, chances are they're making the same resolution they made last year, maybe even the year before and the year before and the year before. And that's because they're relying on motivation and willpower, which doesn't last. It might get you through the first month or two, but after that, most of us stop or we end up going against the resolution we set. However, when you work from your future, you create an energetic pull, very different force. And a pull is like a magnet. You find yourself waking up in the morning and you have all of this energy, but you don't know why, because you're being pulled towards a vision. The best way to explain this is if you just booked a 2-week exotic holiday to somewhere warm and sunny, somewhere you've never been before, you've got a 5-star resort all lined up. Even if you have to wake up at 4 a.m. to make the flight, guess what? You don't need to motivate yourself. You don't need to find willpower. You just get up.
You don't even need an alarm at this point.
Exactly, because the vision is pulling you forward.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean by working from your future, not your past. So when you work from your future, you have a vision of your ideal life. What does that look like? What does that feel like? Who are you? Who are you spending time with? Where are you living? Because when you have clarity of that vision, it then creates a magnetic pull forwards to make that a reality. This is why I often talk about energy, because when there's an energy that pulls you forward, distractions, challenges, and obstacles will seem tiny in comparison to that vision. So I think when people talk about sunk costs, it's because they're working from their past selves. When you work from your future self, you don't care how long it will take because you know someday you will get there. You know the sacrifice is worth it because you know sacrifices are necessary. Otherwise, the thing you want becomes what you sacrifice. So that's on sunk cost. On feeling lost, what I've personally experienced is that when you are feeling lost, it means it's your body telling you you're not where you want to be. Right now where you are is not where you want to be anymore. Maybe it was at some point in the past, but right now what you're absorbing in terms of your learning and your inspiration, that's making you feel lost because you're beginning to question your current reality. Is there more? Is there something that I'm meant to do that I'm not doing right now? And this is where in the book I talk about high and low levels of spiritual energy. When you are high on spiritual energy, you're in flow. You're kind of doing your thing. The job you're doing allows you to bring your best self to work. But when you're low on spiritual energy, it manifests itself with physical tension. So when you get to the Sunday night or the Monday morning, there's this heavy feeling inside of you. You're not looking forward to the day ahead or the week ahead because you know that's not what you want to do for the rest of your life. And that's where feeling lost arises.
But isn't this crazy that so many people fear this? You know, they call it the Sunday scaries, right? You think, oh no, tomorrow is Monday. Now the whole hell starts again. Mm. And a lot of people use their weekends to escape their life.
Yeah.
Because the weekdays are so heavy. But how are we wired in such a way that majority of people are still stuck in this, even if they don't feel like, you know, this is fulfilling them? And I know there's a lot of shackles that we put on ourselves. You know, maybe the money is good, or maybe, you know, you have responsibilities and all of these, like, you know, of course, not everyone comes from the same levels of privileges. But then what is the first step you think someone should take if they are feeling like their current situation does not fulfill their passion?
The very first step, I think, is awareness of that. A lot of people give themselves excuses. I'm doing this for the money. I've got obligations. I've got a mortgage. I've got children. I've got all of these things that are stopping me from taking action. Now, I remember one person said to me, Simon, I love what you're doing, but I think it's too late for me. I've got 3 children. I've got a family to look after. I've just got to stick to a steady job and pay the mortgage. Otherwise, I can't support my family. Now, what I said to them, number one, I think you're in a much more privileged position than most people who would use that excuse, because I know this person quite well. And second, I said to them, what do you think your actions are telling your children? Because children don't listen to what we tell them to do. They follow our actions. So what they're seeing is a parent that says, I should sacrifice my dream in order to pay the mortgage. And is that what you're then going to tell your children to do when they grow up? Find a steady job that pays your mortgage and just live in safety. What you want to show your children is that they should be inspired by something. They should feel that anything is possible. And if you can model that, of course, there'll be different constraints because you have obligations, but don't be seduced by speed. A lot of reasons people say, it's too late for me, I can't do that, is because we look at others, we compare ourselves, and we think we're not moving at the same speed, and we never will be. But speed is never the issue. You can move slowly in the right direction, and you'll still get there at some point. I always say that it is far better to be climbing slowly up the right mountain than fast up the wrong mountain. So you can have all of these excuses, but ultimately the buck stops with you. And do you want at the end of your life a mountain of regret, or the ability to look back and say, thank God I made those decisions, and your children looking up to you saying, you've been such an inspiration, I want to go and chase my dreams as well. So that's what I often say to people, is really be aware of where you are right now, and then take responsibility. You're never really going to change unless you take responsibility for where you are and where you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it feels like you're talking to me directly. Because, you know, even, I mean, I think we have this in common where you also quit, you know, the corporate world and then went into being self-employed and doing your own things and paving a way that doesn't really exist, right? And it's so scary because there's no stability. There's no set path that you can follow. You kind of need to figure it out as you go. And for me, it's been a full year now of me doing this. And you know, it's up and down, right? It's such a roller coaster that you have really high highs and you have very low lows. And I was thinking, even on the way here, I forgot my AirPods. And I was like, oh no, I can't listen to music. Now I have to think. And I was thinking, okay, how has the year been? So I was reflecting on how the year went. And I think it's so easy to really downplay the good things and really focus on the negatives of the things that don't work. And then you think, oh my God, am I even making it? Is this the decision I was meant to take? Is this the right thing? Shall I just go back to stability and a job? But what made it, you know, when did it click for you that this was the right decision?
We have our first PEN event of 2025 called Empower and Excel. It will be a mini summit. We have an incredible lineup of speakers. We're super excited, and we have our early bird tickets going on sale right now. And it comes with our PEN notebook. So no need to wait, get it. And we're super excited to welcome you for another incredible year.
It took a while, and I resonate a lot with what you shared there, because I quit the corporate world. It wasn't as easy as it looks on the outside. You know, it took me probably around 4 to 5 months in my head going back and forth. Do I quit? Do I not quit? Do I quit? Do I not quit? I was weighing up the pros and cons. Eventually, I settled on quitting towards the end of 2016 because I worked for my future self. I said from the future version of me, would I regret not taking this leap? And the answer was always, yes, I would regret it. And that's what eventually gave me the nudge to take that jump. But it is not easy because you're going from an employee mindset to an entrepreneur mindset. And they're very different because when you work in a company alongside with lots of your colleagues and peers, you've got a very focused skill set. You're told to do one job and other people do other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But when you become an entrepreneur, you then take on all of the jobs and the responsibility stops with you because if something doesn't work, your business isn't going to grow. When you are an employee, you can kind of switch off. At the end of each day in the weekend, you can switch off on holidays. You can actually relax.
Mm.
But when you become an entrepreneur, even if you do relax, you're still thinking about your business. You're still thinking about the next opportunity. It becomes part of your life. And so I always say to people, entrepreneurship is not a job title. Entrepreneurship is a lifestyle. Because every single day, you are going to be challenged to stretch yourself. And you're going to be thrown curveballs every day. There are going to be unexpected curveballs. And this is why, like, when we talk about business plans, I like to call it business preparation, not business plans. Because when you plan for something, you're planning with the expectation of order. I'm planning, assuming all of these variables will not change, that these variables will turn out the way I want them to turn out. But if you plan for order and chaos erupts, which in most cases it does, then you're being very reactive. You're reacting to fighting fires.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're preparing yourself, i.e. building relationships, accumulating knowledge, and putting out content into the world, what happens is that whatever the world throws away, you can adapt. And that is an entrepreneurial skill, to adapt to whatever the world throws your way.
Yeah, you're so right. Who was it? Somebody asked me a question, being like, how does it feel to be an entrepreneur? And I said, it literally feels like being a plumber.
Yeah.
Every day there's a new leak and I'm just trying to fix it and make sure the water is going through every day. There's no rest. Even now, because right now I'm running two businesses and right now I have a business partner for one of them. And it's actually this, the Professional Network. And we were like, should we take a week off?
Yeah.
I said we should take 2 weeks off. She was like, no, we can't take 2 weeks off. You have 1 week off. That's it. Because if you're not there, the business doesn't run.
Mm.
And as you said, you know, we are currently reading The E-Myth as well. Mm-hmm. This is our little book club as business partners. We're doing this. And it's so difficult. And you realize that even as a business owner, you're still functioning as an employee.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're trained to do.
Mm.
And to break out of that and become an entrepreneur is a little bit different. But do you think everyone has it in them to be an entrepreneur?
I think deep down, we all have the raw skills. The challenge is if we are prepared to develop those skills. It's like talent. I believe truly we are all talented in something.
Mm-hmm.
When we're born with very unique skill sets because we have different upbringing, different backgrounds, different ways of being nurtured. The thing is, you cannot rely on just talent alone. You've got to nurture it. You've got to develop it. And you've got to find something that allows you to express your skills. I mean, for example, me, I love speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that until I started just trying lots of things. And then one of my coaching clients fortunately said, Simon, I've really enjoyed our coaching together. My company are putting together a leadership seminar next year. Would you be interested in being one of the speakers? And I said, okay, yes, let's give it a shot. It'll be my first paid opportunity if you don't mind that. And she said, no, I think they'll really enjoy it. And so I said yes to that opportunity. And since then, the speaking just grew. And so I find part of it is just saying yes to opportunities to test your skills and see which one sticks. Because you never know until you put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. And then once it makes sense, you're like, this was obvious from the beginning. I should have been able to tell this. Even me, when I was in school, my parents would always be told by the teachers, oh, she's a great student, but she talks a lot. And you know what? Look at today. This is my job now. Just talking to people.
Absolutely. And even when I was young, I remember thinking back to my childhood. And I always used to love art. Like I won a local drawing competition. I was into painting. But my parents would always say, Simon, you know, you keep art as a hobby. You know, it's never really going to pay. And their perception was just going past Leicester Square in London and seeing all these artists who were
on the street,
constantly asking for money and just living life on the street and busking. But funny enough, now that interest in art is manifesting itself through different ways, because whether it's my book in terms of marketing it, whether it's the work that I do with clients, it's coming through creative marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my artistic insight is now flourishing, but in a very unexpected and different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being open to how that develops, I think, is important.
Yeah, I love that. But I also want to move a little bit into, you know, the whole energy thing.
Yeah.
You speak so eloquently about energy and how to make it work for you to live your best life. But I feel like a lot of people also think that the energy chat is a bit wishy-washy and it's the new age and they don't really believe it. They don't understand what it means. But how would you explain it in very simple terms?
Sure, very simple terms. First of all, let's give some context. Energy has been around forever, even in popular culture. So if you watch the Star Wars film franchise, they call it the Force. If you practice yoga, your teacher might call it prana. In Maori culture, they call it mana. In my culture, they call it chi. So whatever term we use to describe it, we're all talking about the same thing, which is energy as life force. The second context I have is that you already experience it. So when you go to a networking event and two people approach you, you are more inclined to start a conversation with one person over the other, even though none of them have said a word yet, because something has drawn you to want to start a conversation. Again, that is energy. Now, if we look at it from a practical point of view, energy management, not time management, is the new productivity, because time management assumes that your energy is constant throughout the day. So when you open your schedule and you look at your day ahead and you go, okay, I'm going to block out 1 hour for this, 2 hours for this, 1 hour for this, and so on. If you're not thinking about your energy, chances are that some of those things won't actually get done. I know some people that say, I've got a busy day, so I'm going to work out at 4 p.m. Now, let's say weather takes a turn for the worse. You have a really intense day. You have a lot of challenges. You feel a bit stressed. By the time it gets to 4, are you really going to go to that workout? Probably not. And so energy management allows you to work with your body and not against it. And it helps you to understand that our energy fluctuates throughout the day. Now, when we think of it from how do I work on myself when I think about energy management, we can split it into 4 dimensions. So you have physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Now, physical is the one we all know. When people start New Year's resolutions, it's always, I'm going to sign up to the gym. I'm going to get a new fitness schedule in place. I'm going to work on my diet. So this is physical energy. It's all about nutrition, movement, and sleep. Mental energy is about creative focus, it's about mindset, and it's about your ability to manage what comes your way each day. That's mental energy. Emotional energy is all about relationships. So the relationship with yourself, the relationship with people around you, and the relationship with the universe around you. And the spiritual energy is all about meaning and purpose. Are you doing something that feels significant and purposeful for you? Because if not, it's just going to feel like a job. It's not going to feel enjoyable. And that's why some processes for people feel like a chore. If it feels like a chore, you're never really going to do it to the best of your ability. But when it feels enjoyable and fun, you're going to show up in a very different way.
Okay. And firstly, going back to what you said in terms of the networking event, some people also call this the vibe of someone, right?
Absolutely.
So that's what you mean by the energy of what you see in someone and how you bond with people.
It's emotion. Emotion is nothing more than energy in motion. I think Maya Angelou said it best when she said, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but they will never forget the way you made them feel. And that is a connection you're creating with somebody that you cannot explain in words, you just feel it. It's the same way when you hear couples go, we knew it was the right time to get married. Now, they can't articulate that in some sort of practical way and say, hey, we sat down with a checklist and we ticked all the items and now we said, it's the next step to get married. They just said, we knew it was the right time. We just felt it was the next part of our journey. This is what we call energy. This is what we call vibe. It's a feeling that we all understand, yet it has no words.
Okay. And now, I mean, I feel like the physical energy is the one that everybody knows how to take care of, right? You know what the action plan is there if you want to improve that one. But which one do you think people struggle with the most of the others?
I would say the one that we struggle the most with is emotional energy.
I thought so.
Emotional energy is the toughest because it requires us to do some deep excavation work to really understand who we are. You know, we all want to be wiser and we want to seek wisdom. But what we easily forget is that wisdom begins with you. You knowing who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, your dark and light sides, your vision, what's required to get there. That is all to do with awareness. And you have to understand who you are as a human, as a person, before you know what's important to focus on. This is why awareness is key. You can't have self-development without self-awareness. And once you do that, it's not easy. And this is why a lot of people cannot spend time alone. They find something to numb that pain of being alone, whether it's jumping onto social media feeds, watching something, listening to something, something just not to be alone. But when you spend time alone, you're able to go inside a lot more, do that work on knowing who you are, and that actually moves you away from ego and to humility. A lot of people operate from ego, and ego, when something doesn't go your way, will often respond with, why not me? Why didn't I get that? Why can't I have that? Why is this person always achieving what I want? That's coming from a place of ego. Whereas humility is saying, what can I learn from this person? What is this situation telling me? How can I come back stronger? It's far more productive coming from a place of humility than it is from ego. But that journey is an internal one. And then it's your relationships with other people, relationships with your partner, your colleagues, your parents. All of these are the relationships you're going to be having a lot day to day. How do you manage those? Because if you don't manage them well, then guess what? They will influence your own personal energy.
Mm-hmm. And isn't there that Harvard study, which is the longest one ever, that said the biggest indicator for happiness is the quality of your relationships?
Absolutely, because your community has a far bigger influence on your mindset and what you see for yourself in the future than you realize. You know, I got asked once when I was talking about my book, Simon, what is the favorite chapter you spent writing in the writing process? And I said, interestingly, it is not a chapter. It is the acknowledgement section. I really enjoyed writing that because it reminded me that there is no such thing as a self-made person.
Mm-hmm.
We are the product of the people that are around us and their influence on what we do and what we end up achieving. So writing that acknowledgement section, it was appreciating my family, my loved ones, the coaches I've had, the mentors I've had, the inspirations I've had, the groups and communities I've been a part of. Every single one of these pieces have made me who I am today.
Yeah, I cannot disagree with that at all. Even I was telling you the other day, I got an award and I was not expecting. I had to say thank you. And I was like, but there's a long list of people here to say thank you because this is really not just me. There's so many people behind this whole podcast for it to happen. And not just in terms of people who work on it, but even the people who are supporting me, who've brought me here. And I was like, this, and even little things, you know, like someone who introduced me to someone else. It's just, it's a whole community here. And I think people really underestimate that.
Yeah.
And also, I like what you talk about because this is something, again, that keeps coming up. You know, today we're more connected than ever with social media and the internet, but loneliness is at its peak as well. Mental health problems are everywhere. People are really struggling. And I feel like we've really lost the art of connecting with each other and sitting down and talking, because even the other day I was at a restaurant and I looked around and every table, everyone is on their phone. People are not talking. People are on a date and on their phone, taking pictures and posting. Families are their kids on their iPads, parents on their phone. And I don't know where we go from here. You know, what do you think? Like, how do we encourage, especially you're a father, how do you encourage in your children how to, you know, break out of this?
I'm at a fortunate point at the moment in the sense that my daughter's still young. So she's not got access to a phone or social media yet. We still allow her to watch some television, but it's controlled in terms of an hour or two a day. But I'm also worried at the same time when she does grow up and she enters those teenage years, how exposure to social media and phones will influence her behavior, her environment in terms of the friends she hangs out with and the dynamics of that. One that I've heard, for example, from other parents was that when they grew up, if you were bullied at school, you knew that when you came home after school on the weekends or when you're on holiday, there was no bullying.
You're free,
You're free. And then, of course, you learn how to respond to it when you go back to school. But nowadays, there's no break from that because that can continue in the online world, cyberbullying and everything else that comes with that. And so it's a very challenging world now for the current generation to manage. And I think it's tough. It's not easy because the first thing we all do when we wake up in the morning in most cases is we jump on our phones, we check our updates, we look at our notifications, we see what's going on in the world. And that isn't healthy. I mean, once in a while is fine, as with any habit. But if it's a bad habit, too much of it is going to be detrimental to our mental health. And what I've noticed, in the same way you've just shared in the question, Sheen, is that a lot of us have lost the art of communication, conversation, and connection. And that, ironically, is the greatest gift that we can give anyone, is the ability to be present and with them, to have a conversation, to understand one another. I remember asking my daughter recently, what would you hope for in 2025? Because we're reflecting on 24, and then we've been looking forward to the new year. And she said, I just want more time with mommy and daddy. That was all she wants. And I think as parents, as a population in general, we tend to buy stuff thinking that that is going to make people happy. Mm-hmm. Yes, it will give you a short injection of happiness in the short term, but longer term, what we all crave is connection, community, and the ability just to share our ups and downs in our life with somebody else. But a lot of us have forgotten how to do that.
Yeah, and that's exactly true. And you're right. Like, I feel like children are, as you said earlier as well, they watch what you do.
Yeah.
So if they see you on your phones all the time, then that's the normal for them.
Mm.
And we can just teach them by also showing them what is the right way. And I feel like us as adults, especially people in our age, right? I mean, also, first of all, caveat. Congratulations on the YouTube success.
Thank you so much.
On the 100K. How does it feel?
It feels good. I mean, it's a nice milestone to hit.
Mm.
And I think it just inspires me to keep going and that the message resonates. I got to be honest, I didn't imagine in 10 months it would hit that milestone.
Less than a year. That's crazy.
Less than a year. And I'm excited for where the coming year will take it.
Mm. And the reason I bring this up is because you have that wonderful video that blew up, right? Which is, you said you are turning 40.
Yeah.
And this is the 40 lessons that you want to pass on to people who are younger. And a lot of it, I watched it, and a lot of it does seem to resonate to the whole thing of like being more present, being grounded, and not overthinking or over planning the future. Mm. So one thing I want to ask here is, you know, how do you balance between overthinking about the future and trying to future-proof yourself and what you talked about earlier in terms of like building your future self that will then pull you into the future? How do you create that balance?
So it's tough because the first step is to have an idea of what that future self is.
Mm.
For a lot of us, we haven't spent time to explore that. And so that's why we don't know what we want. And we are directionless and we just give in to every distraction because there's no clarity as to what actually it is we want in the long term. So the first step is to start there. Now, if you've never done it before, you won't have 100% clarity, but you don't need 100% clarity. You just need to have a vague idea first. And I'm sure each of us will have an idea of what we want ultimately from life. And as you take more steps forward, that becomes clearer and clearer. So the first thing is have an idea of what does that future vision look like and feel like. And then you can start filling the gaps as you go along. However, the second part, and I think this is the tricky part, and this is where emotions can come in here, is that you have to be aware and be very careful not to attach your emotional well-being to whether it happens or not. Because what happens is we attach our emotional well-being to a milestone in the future. So it could be 100K YouTube subscribers. Mm-hmm. It could be $1 million in your bank account, whatever it is. We all have certain goals and milestones that would, for us, be a measure of success.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is if you attach your emotional well-being to that point in the future, what does that mean you are in the present? In most cases, you are anxious, you're frustrated, you're living for tomorrow, but never today. And so you end up falling into this vicious experience of living as if you are never going to die and then dying having never really lived. And so the way to break that is to, yes, have a clear vision of the future, you work towards it, that will get clearer, more sharper. But in the meantime, discard it and focus on the present. What can I do today that will move me closer to that vision and stack the odds in my favor that will happen? I remember when I was visiting Japan one year, I went to Kyoto, and there's so many beautiful temples in Kyoto. And I remember reading an inscription in one of these Zen temples, and it said very simply, be attached to no outcome and open to everything. Now, if we split that into two, be attached to no outcome means that your emotional well-being is not dependent on something happening or not. You never fully control outcomes. All you fully control is inputs. What are the inputs that you are putting in each day? Being open to everything means that you're not rigid. You're open to serendipitous moments. You're open to a chance introduction. In my case, I was open to someone saying, hey, you should come speak at my company. And just being open enough to say yes and figure it out as I go along. So it's balancing the vision with being okay that that would take a while to get to, understanding that things do take time. The challenge is a lot of us can be so attached to that outcome that we're never really living in the present. And the irony is we don't get any action done because we're just wishing, hoping, and over-planning without realizing that the key to stacking the odds in your favor is visualizing years, planning months, executing days.
Okay. Trying to think, how would I do that? Okay. So I like what you said in terms of, it's clear for me in terms of what is overthinking,
yeah,
and what is visualizing your future. And I think at the start of year, a lot of people start to do, you know, like manifestation and planning your year. What do we want to achieve this year? But how do you not attach the emotional part of it to it? Because I feel like, speaking for myself, I know that if I think about, let's say by next year, I want to have this thing with the business, this project A becoming a reality by the end of next year. I know that if I start to sense that it's not happening, I will be upset about it. Or I will start, you know, but this is also what drives my actions. So this is what will push me to, like, you know, start manically trying to get things done. So would you say this is a bad approach?
I would say what you want to be doing is, have, what would success look like for your business? So you have this idea. And then the question you want to ask yourself, which I think is more important long term, because you have to ask yourself this question: do you just want that goal to succeed, or do you want that and more? Because then what you want to focus on is, what would be the habits and the choices I need to make today to increase the odds that happens? And that could be a mindset thing, that could be an action thing, that could be a relationship thing. So you ask yourself, for this to happen, what must change now? And what you'll find very quickly is that when you start to make changes in the present to increase the probability that happens, you'll find you don't just get that. You get lots of other things coming your way. And that's what you really want to focus on, is that foundation. So when I started my business, I said to myself, if I could build a thriving coaching practice one-on-one, I'm already a happy guy. But at the same time, I didn't attach myself to that. I was open to the fact that it could morph into something else. Mm-hmm. There could be other stuff coming in. And so I focused on the foundational habits. For me, one of them was relationships. So I would always sit at the front, if not the front row of events, try and connect with people there, introduce myself, connect with event organizers. And I was just doing this all the time. I was reaching out to people on LinkedIn, on online platforms, and over time the network grew. And just from that, without planning, people would say, hey, Simon, you should speak at this event. Hey, Simon, my friend would love to be coached by you. Hey, Simon, have you thought about working with this company? And people started becoming my marketers, without me planning to do so, just because the foundational habit of building relationships took on a life of its own. And then it was the other area of learning about business. You know, I went to seminars, I read books, and suddenly I got to meet lots of people in my industry and learn from them what I had to do to become better. And so suddenly that in time got done, yes, but then so many other things was given birth to because I was focused on the thing that was stacked the odds in my favor to make that happen. Another way to put it is that the more action you take in terms of stacking the odds in your favor, the greater your surface area of luck. And luck happens when more people are aware of what you do and how you add value and how they can bring value to you. If you are the best thing in the world, but no one knows about you, what's the point of that?
But then, you know, it's hard sometimes to keep shoving it down people's throat, you know, about your achievement and the work that you do. So how do you do it? What do you think is the best approach?
So this is where communication comes into play, is how do you communicate what you do in a way that sounds natural? So I'll give an example. I did a talk recently with a community of entrepreneurs, and their biggest challenge is sales. How do I sell my idea? How do I sell my product or my service? And I say to them, your challenge is right there. You're focusing on the wrong thing, because 99% of entrepreneurs are focused on sales, but that's why most don't do well. What you want to do instead, by switching it on its head, instead of USP standing for unique selling point, change it to unique serving point. How can you serve people so well that either they will say to themselves, how do I do business with this person? Or if not, if they're not your ideal customer, how can I share this with other people? Because that experience was so amazing. And so when you come from that perspective, you'll quickly find that people want to help you. People want to talk about what you do. I remember one time I was having a prospect meeting with someone working in the music industry. We had a 90-minute in-person conversation. And then the next day he was due to fly to New York. And I just listened and listened and listened, asked questions, dug deeper. And I didn't focus on any selling as we got to the end. And I said, you go to New York, you do what you need to do. When you come back, let me know how you want to proceed. I let him have the decision. But when he went to New York, I sent him a WhatsApp. And I said in this WhatsApp, here's a playlist I just created on Spotify for you. When you have a chance after you checked in and settled into the hotel, give it a listen and just let me know how you find it. And I knew this would work for him because he was in the music industry, mm-hmm. so he would appreciate the music playlist. He listened to it, and a few hours later, he sent me a WhatsApp back. And he said, Simon, I just checked in. I'm looking at the clouds and Central Park from up above. I put your playlist on, and it's really got me reflecting. When do we start working together? And that was him making that decision. So the issue we have is that we need to come from a place of serving, because they're going to be thinking, wow, if this is what I'm getting now, what is it going to be like when we work together? What is that going to feel like? Imagine what I could achieve when we actually formalize our relationship.
Wow. Okay. Well, Simon, this whole time I've been asking you questions because I didn't want to start with the question I'm going to ask you that now, which is, what is life coaching? And I was just asking you the questions to just show to everyone else how amazing you are at this. And I know what life coaching is. I know how beautiful you are at helping and guiding people and unlocking their potential. But I feel like people don't really understand what a life coach is. And I think we've all had a beautiful experience right now of what life coaching is. I feel coached. and I feel like it is so important. Some people need it more than others, but I feel like everybody needs one at some point in their life. And even for me, it's been pivotal when I had mentors and life coaches that helped me. But how would you define what coaching is, especially life coaching? Because, you know, I feel like if you tell someone I have a sports coach or a PT and things like that, people are like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But when you tell them you have a life coach, they can be like a little bit skeptical about it.
And it's funny because when you ask that question, it reminds me of one of the challenges I give all of my mentees and people I speak to who are in business. I always say to them, you will get asked, I guarantee you, when you go to a networking event and nobody knows who you are, one of the first questions they will ask you is, what do you do? And we tend to default to using a title. I'm a coach. I'm a speaker. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a chef. I'm an actor. But the thing is, a title tells you nothing. And we as humans, not our fault, but we as humans, we make judgments on a title before we know anything else. So if I said to someone, hi, I'm Simon. I'm an accountant. Now, I might be the best accountant and the funniest accountant you've ever met, but just because you've heard the word accountant, you think boring.
Boring.
Straight away. So my challenge to people is to always lead with a story. Lead with a story where you can create and evoke an emotion in someone. And so for me, when I talk about coaching to people, what is coaching? The way I describe it, it's like you have a key that unlocks the source of your wisdom. Because coaching is, in essence, the power of using the right question at the right time. So just to give context, in a recent coaching session, someone said to me, Simon, it's been 5 years I've been working on this book idea. I really think it's going to do well, but I'm just trying to make sure it's perfect. I'm just trying to make sure it has a message I want to get out into the world. And I know the reality is, the reason it's taken 5 years is because there's a lot of fears and doubts in their mind about whether that would do well. And they're experiencing some imposter syndrome. So hearing all of that, the question that came to my mind, and it opened up a little door in the head, was how much longer are you going to avoid what you are capable of doing in order to continue with what you are comfortable doing? And I just let that sit. And then let them reflect on that question. Because it could be the very thing they need to realize it's them stopping them and what must change.
Yeah, it's like holding a little mirror, isn't it? At the right time, about the right things. No, that makes a lot of sense. But then, Simon, you have all of the right tools. I mean, I feel like you help everyone else. As you said, you have the key.
Yeah.
Does that mean you are never stressed out?
No, I'm human as well. I stress out. I have self-doubt. I have my own fears. I just manage them a lot better than I used to. For example, when I was writing the book during the COVID pandemic, it was probably one of the toughest years of my life. People see the book on the shelves, they read it. But the fact is, at some points, I didn't even know I was going to finish it. I didn't even know I was going to make it to the end because I got the book there in April 2020. That was the same month that the UK went into its first lockdown. Mm-hmm. It was the same month where my wife and I had our daughter. And it was also the same month where all of my speaking invitations were cancelled because nobody could hold an event in person, at least for that first year. And so I had to pivot a lot in the business and the expectation that my family would be over to help with childcare so I could focus on writing didn't actually materialize. They had to cancel their flights and hotel stays. And so it was a balancing act between writing a book, managing a business and a household, and changing diapers and putting my baby to sleep. So it was a really tough year. And as I said, there were a couple of moments. I said to my wife, I'm not sure I'm going to finish the book. Do I ask for an extension? Do I stop the project? And, you know, she said, there is not many people that get the opportunity you've got. You've got to do it. However long it takes, you've got to see it to the end because you're going to be kicking yourself if you don't take advantage of that opportunity. And it made me realize at that point as well, is that who your partner in life is so, so important because we don't talk about it enough. I mean, when we talk about environment, we talk about people you spend time with, the books you read, who you follow on social media. But your life partner is the person you're going to spend the most time with aside from yourself. And so if they're going to champion you, that's going to give you the motivation, the inspiration, the energy just when you need it. And you never know when that point will be.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I feel like I feel like we could have a whole other podcast on this topic, you know, because this is something that the new generation talks about a lot. A lot of people are settling. There's a lot of pressure. Yeah. People are getting married later in life. So much going on, but you're so right. Mm. Your life partner is a very important decision.
Yeah.
Because they not only impact your personal life, they impact your professional life as well. And that's such a good point. But I guess now one of the final questions I have for you is what advice do you have for how to start the year on the best foot?
Best advice I can give, start small. Start small. A lot of us, when we begin a new year, we try and do too much. We set these big, lofty goals of what we're going to do, what we're going to achieve. We tell everyone, and then we start strong and then we fail. And then we just stop for whatever reason. What you want to do is focus on starting small and being consistent. And you can always build on that. Just do one tiny thing that is going to stretch you a little bit, but it's not going to throw you into the deep end. And then build on that slowly. That's what I would say. Yes, think big, but start slow and be consistent. Because consistency will always be intensity. Too many of us have it the other way around. I'm going to go intense. I'm going to go hard. I'm going to go strong. We're going to go all in. It's fine, but that's not sustainable over the 365 days you've got ahead. Start small, be consistent, and then when you build the confidence, you can add on top of that. Mm-hmm. That's the best advice I can give. Start small, be consistent.
And what's next for you, Simon? What's coming out now for you in the next few years?
What's next? Is every year, you know, Shin, I love challenging and disrupting myself. I've always said to people that in today's world, it has never been easier to succeed because all the information you need, the information is out there. Mm-hmm. It's in books, it's in YouTube videos, it's in podcasts. All the information you need is out there to be successful. So the challenge today is not whether you can become successful. The challenge is remaining who you are after you're successful. And so one of the ways I do this for myself is every year I give myself a challenge. I try and think of a way to disrupt myself. So this year, for example, it's going to be focusing on building community. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was on building a YouTube channel. So that was my challenge.
Successfully.
This year, it's going to be on how to build community from there. Mm-hmm. And then it allows me to feel like a beginner every year, to feel like I'm starting from scratch because that eternal student mindset is so important. You know, there's this idea I share a lot called the 100-hour rule, is that if you spend 100 hours in a year to learn your field, it puts you ahead of 95% of your peers. And that, if you bring that to a daily basis, is only 18 minutes a day. So 18 minutes a day on average for 1 year will put you ahead of 95% of people if you commit to learning and studying on a daily basis.
When you put it like that, it sounds so easy to get better.
A big mistake we often make is we overcomplicate things. It's like physical energy. You know, I mentioned it's nutrition, it's movement, it's sleep. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will say to me, Simon, that sounds so easy. Is that really all there is? And so my response to them is this. There's a famous proverb that goes an apple a day keeps the doctor away. How many of you still eat an apple a day? Yet we're told that since we were a child. And so the information that is out there, a lot of it is a lot simpler than we realize. We just overcomplicate it. If we just put that simple advice to action and apply it every day, guess what? You will get there. But we tend to find, what's the quickest hack? What's the strategy I need? What's the gym clothes I need to get? What's the best brand to work with? What's the best gym or PT I need to work with? Just get out and run. Just get out and start walking. Go swim. It's as easy as that, but we overcomplicate it.
Keeping it simple.
Absolutely.
Should be our theme for 2025. I like it. Okay, that's amazing. And I guess the final question, which I ask every guest, and I feel like for you it's a bit too easy, but I'm going to ask it anyway, is how do you introduce Simon without mentioning what you do as a job, where you're from, and what education you have?
The best way I would introduce Simon is that everything he does is designed to inspire you to live a better story, to understand that your yesterday does not have to be your tomorrow, and that within your hands, you are both the sculptor and the sculptor.
See, I knew it was too easy for him. This just feels wrong. But thank you. Is there anything else you would like to leave the audience with?
The only thing I would leave the audience with is the fact that you may wish to win the lottery of your national regional jackpot. But what we often forget is that you have already won the greatest lottery that there is going, and that is the lottery of life. You being born is a miracle. The question for you is, what are you going to do with that winning ticket? What are you going to do with that winning ticket of life?
Well, I need to go think now. But thank you so much, Simon. I knew this would have been amazing, but it was so much better than I even expected. Thank you for everything you do as well, for helping everyone else out there. And if you ever back in Dubai, we'll do a part 2.
Absolutely. Sheen, thank you so much for having me on.